Motorcycles, international intrigue, and investing? All on this episode of Unlock Your Wealth Today, your life fully invested. Welcome to Unlock Your Wealth Today, your life fully invested. I'm your purveyor of prosperity and host, Heather Wagenhals. And on this episode, I'm making success simple with motorcycles, international intrigue. Oh yeah, and that little thing called investing, what today's show is all about, with an incredible guest, two-time Guinness World Record holding author and investor, Jim Rogers joins us today. And we're going to talk about the book that kicked it off for me with his incredible writing style and his ability to teach economics and enjoy adventure at the same time. I'm talking about his investment biker book, and we'll also discuss his second trip around the world by car, and we'll take and hear from some of the great stories as well as the lessons learned between the two trips. So let's get started. Jim, welcome to Unlock Your Wealth Today.
I am delighted to be here, Heather. It is my pleasure, my honor.
Well, the honor is all mine, if I can borrow some of that, because you are a legend in investing. But one of the things that inspired me so much, because you covered so many things in one book, it's like a life lesson, actually. And I think maybe college kids should be handed this instead of some of the books that they have, was your investment biker book. It gets action adventure, it's motorcycling, it's worldwide travel, and an investing lesson all rolled into one. So let's start with how you came about deciding on this big adventure.
Well, thank you, Heather. I had a lot of fun doing it, as you can probably tell from reading it. I don't know. All my life, I used to say when I was a kid, I want to go around the world on a motorcycle. Little did I know that I meant it. You know, I've been saying that since I was like 18 or 19 years old. And lo and behold, one of the things I set out to do was to retire early so I could go around the world on my motorcycle. Heather, I had no clue that I meant it or that I knew what I was talking about. But I did it, and then I did it again in a car, as you know. I've always wanted adventure. Somebody once wrote about me in a book 30 or 40 years ago, this guy wants to quit so he can have adventure. I'm a little crazy. I'm keen on adventure.
I like that. I think we're cut from the same cloth, and I hung on every word of that book. So you and a partner decided that you were just going to go on this adventure. How much planning went into it before you got started?
Well, you cannot plan a whole lot on a trip like this, Heather, because you never know when there's going to be a war or an epidemic or a blizzard or who knows what. Plus, you can't get too many visas far in advance, because visas usually are only good for 6 months or so. So you have to get your visas along the way, and you never know the route, because who knows? If a war breaks out, you have to change your route. So there's not much you can plan. You can plan what to take, but you can't take too much on a motorcycle, and off you go and hope.
So now let's set the stage for us, time frame wise. What year was it that you started your adventure, and what was going on, like, economically and politically at the beginning?
Well, this particular trip started in 1990. The Berlin Wall had fallen just a few months before, so the world was in the midst of big change, although the world didn't know it was in the midst of big change. Traveling along, I certainly found out about the big change. It was pretty clear that nobody wanted to be a communist anymore. Nobody even wanted to be a socialist. And if they wanted to be a socialist, they wanted to be a rich socialist. It was pretty clear that the world was changing very dramatically and very quickly as we traveled, including, we went across the Soviet Union. It was still the Soviet Union then, but falling apart quickly. And so we went through a period of a lot of dramatic change, whether it was Africa or Soviet Union, China, wherever it was, the world was changing, which was great.
Well, you had that, and then not only political climates to deal with, but some of the rain and some of the other challenges. What was the scariest part? Because there were a lot of scary parts as I was joining you on this adventure of yours in retrospect. But at the time, were you thinking, oh my gosh, I don't think it could get any worse? And then boom, it gets worse.
Well, let's see, you remind me that we were once held hostage for 8 or 9 days in the middle of Africa. That was worrisome, needless to say. They kept asking. It was the police, by the way, who held us hostage. They kept asking for more money. Finally, we convinced them we didn't have any more money. And they put us on a flat car and sent us out of town. There were various and sundry problems as we went along. You know, there were various civil wars, regular wars, all kinds of things were happening. But we were extremely careful because we knew the risk. We tried to maintain an update on what was happening in the world. So if we went into a country or if we could avoid a country, we did avoid some countries. And we made it. We're still alive. I'm delighted.
Yeah, I was fascinated by barge life when you didn't realize that like these whole civilizations are just floating along the water.
Well, when we made a plan to get on the barge, I went to see the captain or the owner of the barge and said, do we need to take food? And he said, no, there's plenty of food on the barge. It was African food, which was wonderful. It didn't have beans or steak or anything like that. All the locals were cooking on the barge as we floated down the water. It was always very, very good. That's one of the reasons I wanted to do it and still want to do it, Heather, is because I want to see the world as it really is, and I want adventure.
Yes. And right now I'm living vicariously through folks until the world opens up and then we can actually get doing that again. One of the things that fascinated me about your book was the way you wove in investment education and the way you talked about the different things in some of the emerging economies. And the black markets were a better indicator than what the politicians were talking about. So can you share some of how you came about that insight, how you chose to share that as your insight?
Well, the black market won't necessarily tell you what's wrong with a country, but it will tell you that there is something wrong or there wouldn't be a black market. And it also tells you how serious, if you take your temperature, it will tell you how high your fever is. Well, the black market will tell you how serious the problem is if there's a gigantic premium. Not every country has a black market, but when we crossed the border, if we found a black market, that was an immediate indicator of some of the things going on. And it was everybody should know about black markets. Everybody should know about currency markets, and everybody should know about the world. At least that's my view.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I liked was some of the countries that if you never traveled or didn't have boots on the ground experience, you might not necessarily invest in certain countries, but you took the opportunity to make some investments along the way.
Oh, yes. When, for instance, we drove through Africa and when we got almost to the bottom, we crossed the border into a country called Botswana, and I immediately knew something was different. It was efficient. It took us 10 minutes to get through instead of hours or hassles and haggling and all sorts of paperwork. So I knew something was different. There was no black market, which was immediately clear, because if there's a black market, Heather, it finds you. When you cross the border, they say, hey, look, those are foreigners. They're Americans, so the black market would converge. Black market always finds you. But it was clear there was no black market. The currency was sound. You could just change money at the bank. And then we got on the highway, and it was paved. There was a road with signs. and shopping centers. I mean, not like, you know, Arizona or something, but still decent shopping centers, restaurants, hotels. So when I got to the Capitol, I asked if there was a stock market, and the guy said, yeah, there's a stock market. So I rushed down to the stock market, and there was. It was fairly new. There were only seven companies listed, but I bought all seven of them. So don't think I'm a big hitter. There are only seven companies listed. But I could see that Botswana, whatever it was, and I did obviously did much more research, was much different from the recent countries in Africa through which we traveled. And it is and was. They believed in markets, they believed in the rule of law, and they were very prosperous. One reason they were so prosperous is they had a gigantic diamond mine. So, you know, Heather, if you give me a big diamond mine, I'll show you a very, very good time. And they had a big diamond mine, and they were doing, which was one reason they became prosperous. But it was an interesting experience. And whenever that sort of thing happened, because of my background, I would try to see if there's a stock market.
Did you have a favorite country along this trip?
Arizona.
Cheating.
No. I mean, favorite country. They were all, we got held hostage for 9 days, 8 or 9 days in the Congo, as I told you.
Yeah.
The Congo was a constant adventure, a constant eye opener, and scenery like you've never seen anywhere. So favorite, the answer is they were all my favorite, but many were favorites in different ways. We went through Siberia. I mean, what a nightmare, but it was always fascinating, always exciting, and always adventuresome.
So I do have one question. What was it like having supper at the police, the head of the police who was holding you hostages? What was it like? You're just having dinner at his house with his family, but you can't leave.
Well, that's right. I mean, he was one holding us hostage. He refused to let us leave, and there was no way to get out, because if you try to drive away, obviously he would alert the people a few miles down the road and you'd be dead or stopped immediately. No, he was pleasant. His wife, his children were pleasant and nice. We went to a disco one night. We did all sorts of things, but he wouldn't let us leave until we gave him more money. Now, as I said before, in the end, we convinced him. We'd given him all our money. We had some money hidden on the motorcycles, which he never found.
I know, that was clever, too, the way you hid it inside the manuals.
Yes. Well, wasn't my first rodeo. So we tried to do everything we could. We gave him some money, and we had a nice time. His wife cooked a good dinner. You know, the disco was fun. But he wouldn't let us leave until finally.
It's such an amazing adventure. There was something that's interesting. So one of the things that I focus on is identity theft and risk management, frauds and scams. And so you probably experienced a little bit of all of those, but it's hard enough to solve an identity theft issue or a fraud issue when you're in this country. How did you sort out somebody in your inner sanctum writing checks and just stealing right from you while you're on your adventure?
Well, fortunately, the internet was not so, fortunately or unfortunately, the internet was not so developed then. It is now, of course. It's a huge, huge threat now everywhere you go. But it was not that big a problem then. The more worrisome, of course, was just physical theft, physical robbery or something, or murder or something like that. But we were always very, very careful. And as I said before, we always tried to be extremely careful. And some people immediately would say they must be rich because look at those motorcycles. But on the other hand, we would always say, we don't have much money because that's why we're traveling by motorcycle. We don't have any money. Right. We can't afford a car. We can't afford a truck. And often they accepted that.
Well, so let's take a look at your second trip that you did by car. So you made several predictions in Investment Biker. And so some of those held true, some of those maybe not so much. So what was What was dramatically different on the trip from the first trip to the second trip?
Well, the most dramatic difference was the state of the world and the attitude about socialism, communism, et cetera. As I said, nobody wanted to be a socialist anymore. And if they did, they wanted to be rich. Everybody was trying to open up their economies, et cetera. A reflection of that was on the first trip, credit cards you couldn't use in many countries, and you certainly couldn't get cash advances. On the second trip, though, credit cards were accepted just about everywhere. The world became much more open and international, and we could get cash advances with a credit card, which was unknown on the first trip. But remember, the Berlin Wall fell just as we set out, and that started an avalanche of opening up countries and economies.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of the things that stayed the same that you were happy to see stay the same?
Terror, fear, war. We were always worried about wars, and we went through several war zones on both trips. Unfortunately for the world, there were always civil wars, you know, revolutionary wars, et cetera. And that happened on the second trip. I think we went through 15 war zones on the second trip. We went through several war zones on the first trip. And for whatever reason, people like to kill each other, or like to rob from me, like to steal from each other. I would say many of these revolutions are really just one group of people trying to take the money from the other people.
Mm-hmm. So what did you expect to change between the trips, but didn't? Was there anything that you were like, I thought that would have been remedied by now?
Well, the opening of the economies and the opening of the societies, I guess I should have known and probably did know that it was happening, but it really was so vivid when we traveled around the world, and that everybody welcomed us as capitalists. They assumed we were capitalists. Nobody was anti-capitalist on the second trip. In the first trip, there were plenty of anti-capitalists. I tell you, we went through China, Red China. We went through Soviet Union. There were many people who were anti-capitalist on the first trip. There was not much of that on the second trip.
So as we kind of transition from the book to investing, what are some really good basic lessons that people need to consider, maybe a checklist, when they're going to think about foreign investment?
Do your homework. That's all you need to know. Do lots of homework. Don't listen to other people. Don't listen to hot tips. Don't listen to the TV. Do your own research and find out what's really going on. Traveling close to the ground is one way to do that. I told you about the experience in Botswana. By the time I got to the stock exchange, I knew this was a country where I wanted to invest. I had experienced it firsthand. I'd done more research, and I knew. But if you do your research, chances are you will be successful.
Well, it's always fascinating to hear you speak and to have read your books. And I'm looking forward to the next adventure that you're on. One of my next adventures is I'm hosting Freedom Fest, not just broadcasting this year. And with what's going on politically in the world and economically, we're facing inflation. Why have you been a big participant in Freedom Fest and the Global Financial Summit? And why should people come this year?
Well, I've always philosophically agreed with the people who run Freedom Fest. I've known them for a long, long time. So I guess that's the main reason that I went, because not many places where you can gather with people who think like you do. Many people in the United States or in the world think entirely different. They want a free lunch. They say, give me a free lunch, give me a free lunch. Well, this crowd, most of them know there is no free lunch, and most of them support individual efforts and independent thinking, which I always liked and have since I was very young. And as I say, I have known the people at Freedom Fest for a long time.
Well, I'm really excited to take this next level with Freedom Fest for sure. Now, if folks want to find your books, they can go on Amazon, right?
Yeah, Amazon, or go to your local bookstore. If the bookstore doesn't have it, they probably won't, but they can order it. They can, bookstores can order anything these days, and certainly Amazon can order anything.
Excellent. And you're still speaking. So if folks want to catch your speaking schedule, is there a website they can go to find out?
Well, I have www.jimrogers.com, and basically it is the adventure, the last adventure, because we went around the world at the turn of the millennium. And I purposely did it at the turn of the millennium because I knew that no one had ever gone the world around the world at the turn of the millennium before. And if they did, they didn't put it on the internet. So I wanted a permanent record of what the world was like at the turn of the millennium. And by the way, we also put up my speaking schedule at the same place. I have to have some place to put it. And as you well know, not as many speaking engagements these days because the world has been closing down. It's starting to open a little bit, but there's not much, not many gatherings. I'm delighted to see that Freedom Fest is happening, and I'm delighted to see that people are going.
I'm really thrilled to be a part of it. Well, it's been such a pleasure to chat with you today. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. And for those of you without a pencil, never fear, unlockyourwealthtoday.com is here, where you can visit Jim's show page, get the links to all of his great resources, to Freedom Fest, and so much more. Thank you so much for stopping by and being a part of today's show. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and I'm making success simple for you. Now go out and unlock your wealth today.
UnlockYourWealthToday.com is produced by Heather Wagenhals and the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. Unlock Your Wealth Today and affiliated brands are copyrighted 2022 by Heather Wagenhals, all rights reserved. For more information about the Keys to Riches financial philosophy or this week's free strategy, please visit UnlockYourWealthToday.com.